James Beard Award-winning author Mark Kurlansky is perhaps best known for his single-topic books on everyday subjects. Cod, a biography of the fish that changed the world, and Salt, a world history, are classics in the field of food history and were national bestsellers. Now comes Milk, a comprehensive and entertaining history of the human relationship to dairy since the domestication of animals more than 10,000 years ago. The full title of the book is Milk, a 10,000-Year Food Fracas, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Mark Kurlansky back to the roundtable. Mark, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joe.
Talk to us about this idea of a 10,000-year food fracas.
Well, there's a lot of arguments about milk right now, and there always have been. And some of these arguments are arguments that have been going on for 10,000 years. We actually never seem to settle any of the arguments, so as history goes on, you get more and more.
You say in the book that when you think about it, it is a weird thing to begin with that you could replace mothers with the secretions from animals.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to have heard how this happened when it first happened, you know, when there was either the mother died or couldn't produce enough milk or something, and somebody said, oh, well, look at that goat over there. They seem to have the same stuff.
So for you, where does the story begin? When you take on a project like this, as you did with Cod and as you did with Salt, where do you start?
Well, you know, the earliest recorded history is about 10,000 years ago when animals were first domesticated. And, you know, first recorded in Sumeria. But I have to say a lot of things are first recorded in Sumeria because the Sumerians were the first ones to invent a written language. You know, so they left records of everything they did, and there may have been people before them doing the same thing, but, you know, they couldn't write.
When it comes to milk, you're talking about milk from many animals, not just cows, of course.
Right, right. I mean, it sort of settled on cows. Certainly not the original, because it started in the Middle East, and cows aren't very well adapted to the Middle East. It settled on cows because, not because anybody felt that was the best milk, but because they were the most productive animals.
You do write in the book quite a bit about the impact that dairy products had on world cultures, and certainly the economies of these cultures. Cheese, yogurt, these have had profound impacts on economies and cultures. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, for a very long time, hardly anybody actually drank milk. Long before we understood anything about microbes, we understood, I mean, it was just observable, that you got sick from milk if it wasn't really fresh, like almost straight out of the animal, especially in hotter climates. And so the milk was quickly taken and made into something else, cheese or yogurt. And the only people who drank milk were people who lived on farms. And also, you know, these products like cheese and yogurt were quite easy to trade. And, you know, milk did not travel well, so you couldn't trade in milk. There was some trade in butter.
When did it become really popular?
What, drinking milk?
Well, I was going to ask about, let's talk first about cheese and the things that could be traded.
Well, I mean, cheese and yogurt go back to very ancient times. The Greeks and the Romans loved cheese. Yogurt was a staple of the Arab world and Iran, then Persia, and these things were a very well-established part of food long before drinking milk was. Rome traded cheese, made cheese. I mean, there's lots of ancient recipes for cheese. Northern Europe was also very big for cheese, but it's really where milk drinking began, except, as I say, on farms. You know, so this was a funny thing, because anything that's only done by farmers, everybody looks down on, right?
Mm.
So when the Romans started invading Europe and seeing other European cultures and finding that they drank milk, they said, oh, you know, these people were such barbarians, they drank milk like a bunch of farmers. Really looked down on them. And for a very long time, milk drinking was looked down on. Until the Dutch drank a lot of milk and made an enormous amount of cheese and were scoffed at and called cheeseheads. Until the 17th century, the golden age of the Dutch, when they dominated world trade and also art, you know, the Northern Renaissance. And then people started saying, well, maybe this dairy consumption isn't so bad.
When mass production of milk came about, and the mass production of milk and dairy products in general, how did that change the landscape? How did that change things?
You mean industrial, or just when it was commonplace to drink milk?
Let's say commonplace to drink milk.
Well, when it was commonplace to drink milk, and there was a move away from breastfeeding, and including both mothers and wet nurses, and towards what was called artificial feeding, which was feeding babies animal milk. This was particularly accelerated by the phenomena of women working. And then when children were drinking a lot of animal milk, it was killing them because they didn't know very much about sanitation or how to keep milk. And particularly in cities, you know, New York City, over half of the deaths in a year were people under the age of five, mostly caused by milk. Just horrendous infant mortality rates in all of the cities, in New York and Chicago and Boston and London and Paris. In the mid-century was when Pasteur's process became known, which he didn't actually originally invent for milk. I mean, he was trying to understand these invisible organisms that cause disease and also cause fermentation, and he learned that you could kill them with heat, and that was the beginning of the pasteurization process. But it was very controversial. A lot of people felt that it made inferior milk, and other people argued, yeah, but at least it won't kill your kid. Come on. you know, this argument has never gone away. There's a very strong belief of a lot of people that raw milk is better milk and healthier milk than pasteurized milk, which is probably true, provided it's well taken care of. The problem was monitoring it. It just seemed so much easier to make sure that everybody had pasteurization machines and used them right than to monitor the production of raw milk and make sure that it was always healthy and clean. And so governments, at the urging of public health officials, started passing regulations insisting on pasteurization, but still very controversial. In the United States, it goes by states, and some states... different states have different rules about raw milk. Some states don't allow it at all. New York State, you can only buy it at the farm. It's not allowed to be transported.
Mm.
Some states are okay with it, but it always has to be extremely well monitored.
You write in the book about homogenization, which comes on the scene about 1909, 1910, and you say it's one of those ideas that seem obvious once someone thinks of it.
I mean, all they did was they forced the cream through like a screen, you know, through tiny holes to make the fat globules much smaller so that they would merge with the liquid, and you didn't have... separate milk and cream. personally, I think it's too bad. I grew up with unhomogenized milk, and what today is called creamline milk. But when I was growing up, it was just called milk. And, you know, I think it was much better.
You finish your book with a chapter called The Search for Consensus. Do you believe we'll ever find that?
No, I. You know, we haven't by now. Why should we think that we ever will? you know, there's still, you know, the really ancient arguments are still really lively about the benefit of human milk versus animal milk, and if you use human milk, should it be supplemented? And if you use animal milk, which animals are best? You know, and after 10,000 years, they're still arguing these things, and they're not resolved. I don't think they're ever going to get resolved, partly because, you know, there probably isn't any exact answer. You know, it's like, is milk healthy for you? Well, it depends on what kind of health you're in. You know, if you're having problems with, you know, heart disease or cholesterol or something, it's probably not good for you. If you have a lack of calcium and need more calcium, it probably is good for you. If you have too much calcium, it's bad for you. So, you know, people ask me all the time, they say, so is milk good for you or isn't it? And, you know, I couldn't tell you unless I was a doctor and gave you a complete physical first.
As always, you have wonderful recipes in the book too, and there's a section in the book basically saying, telling you where you can see the recipes throughout the volume. Your interest in recipes, this has gone on for a while, right? I mean, this comes
with
the territory.
I love recipes as artifacts, as cultural artifacts and historic. But you have to have the original recipe. You know, once you adopt it to the modern kitchen, you've lost everything. But when you can read an original recipe, you learn a lot about that culture and that society and where they were historically. So I think recipes are very valuable. And that's what I look for in recipes. I don't necessarily look for recipes that will produce something good to eat. In my cod book, some of those recipes were horrendous, but I thought they were interesting. In the milk book, you know, there are so many recipes for dairy food that I thought, well, why not just pick really good ones? So most of the recipes in the milk book really are good recipes. There's a few to be avoided, like Richard Nixon's cottage cheese and ketchup recipe, I'd steer clear of. But some of these recipes are just really great.
The name of the book is Milk, a 10,000-year food fracas, and it is published by Bloomsbury. Mark Kurlansky, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Milk. It is published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.